Hey y'all, Scott here. The International Students for Liberty Conference in Washington, D.C. is coming up on the 17th through 19th of February at the Washington Marriott Wardman Park. And me, Sheldon Richmond, and Jared LaBelle, three-quarters of the Libertarian Institute, will be there. Go to isflc.org/register and use promo code Libertarian to get $30 off registration. We'll have a table. There'll be a ton of other great speakers and groups, and who knows what. It'll be cool. Check it out, isflc.org/register. All right, y'all, Scott Horton Show. ScottHorton.org, LibertarianInstitute.org, and Twitter.com/ScottHortonShow, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, good. On the line, I got my friend Jim Bovard, our friend, the great Jim Bovard, author of a great many books, including the great memoir Public Policy Hooligan, explaining why all the directors of all the agencies hate Jim so very much. And then before that, a bunch of books. Attention Deficit Democracy, The Bush Betrayal, Terrorism and Tyranny, Feeling Your Pain, Freedom in Chains, The Fair Trade Fraud, The Farm Fiasco. What'd I leave out, Jim?
It's close enough for government work.
That was pretty good. All right. Hey, welcome back to the show. How are you doing, my friend?
Hey, doing good. Thanks for having me on, Scott. And congratulations on the Libertarian Institute. I'm glad to see that y'all are off to a strong start. You've got a strong web presence that's great to see your stuff on Twitter, and, y'all are doing some hard-line stuff, and you're just punching it out there with some good humor, and best of luck to you and the Libertarian Institute.
Awesome. Thanks, man. I appreciate that. Good deal. Hey, listen, I read these great things that you wrote. That's why I wanted to talk with you about them. $1 billion of federally funded paranoia. That is at the Future of Freedom Foundation. It was in the Future of Freedom back a few months ago. Now it's online for everyone to see at fff.org, and we'll get to that one first here in just a second. But in USA Today, hey, wait a minute, Trump's fear-mongering isn't new. Well, there sure is a hell of a lot of fear-mongering, and we'll get to it in just a second. Maybe we can combine both of these into one kind of big discussion. $1 billion of federally funded paranoia. You're talking about the fusion centers, 70-plus Department of Homeland Security-funded fusion centers. So I guess that's my first question right there. They're not. Are they Homeland Security things, or they're just multi-jurisdictional task force? Is anybody the governor of the fusion centers? Who really is in charge of these things, the DOJ?
It's Homeland Security is financing them, so Homeland Security's got a lot of oversight of them. It was interesting to see some of the congressional reports on this. Senator Tom Coburn did some great stuff on this, and something which he and other investigators found out is that the Homeland Security does not even know how many of these fusion centers are out there. Maybe it's 71, maybe it's 75. They were, there was an internal report from DHS that admitted that four of the 72 did not actually exist. But that internal report did not stop the DHS from keeping on bragging about the existence of these non-existent fusion centers. But fundamental issue is that this is basically turned into vacuum cleaners and encouragement for the people to make reports on almost anything that seems unusual or suspicious, or anybody who looks suspicious. And so you've got these fairly funded vacuum cleaners out there. They're stockpiling all this information, all these unverified accusations, and these are databases that get shared and get used and could be used against people.
Yeah, well, now I can't say I've heard of too many abuses by these fusion centers. That must mean that there haven't been any and that it's not a big deal, and these are people just trying to help and keep us safe. Jim, what the hell is the matter with you all the time?
Well, you know, some people are born paranoid. What can I say? But part of the reason you haven't heard that many controversies is most of what they do is behind closed doors, and it's often very difficult to get access to find out how they have used the power that they have claimed. But there's some of these fusion centers have tagged different groups as dangerous extremists, such as gun rights activists, people who are concerned about the federal authority, prefer state and local authority. People who champion the Constitution. There was one DHS report that said that people who are, quote, reverent of individual liberty should be considered potential right-wing terrorists. So this is these are like a series of Pandora's boxes that are being opened with federal money around the nation.
Yeah. Well, now, you know, this is only sort of a side issue, Jim, this new ACLU report about the TSA's behavior observation system. I'm sorry, I forgot what I called it. But just what completely bogus junk science it was, and how bogus the parameters were, as you're saying, you know, pretty much along these same kind of lines. Anybody who says they have a preference for being free is suspect in America, really? Even on the 4th of July, or just on the 3rd and the 5th, or how's exactly that work? Or, and of course, you know, the rules, and you've covered this probably better than anybody in our country, actually, on the TSA. Their rules include, you know, he's got his hands in his pockets, or he's sweaty, or he's not sweaty, or he's looking down, or he's looking up, or he's looking straight, or he does what you say, or he doesn't do what you say, or whatever it is. And then you basically really have, in some cases, some kind of score, right, where they try to quantify based on these sort of bogus parameters in the first place. Then they put you through a threat matrix and figure out how dangerous you are. And as you say, kind of there, referring to gun rights activists and whatever, people who are actually just plain old, quote-unquote, law-abiding citizens become the subjects of maybe worse than criminal investigation, anti-terrorism investigations? And what does that mean for them?
Well, I mean, it's a Pandora's box, and the governor's got a lot of different ways that they can open that and maybe toss you inside the Pandora's box, to mess up my metaphors there. But the it's going back to what the DHS has done. I mean, even a dozen years ago, DHS was encouraging, police and others to take a very broad view of potential people that could be potential problems. For one, there was an advisory DHS sent out around the start of the Iraq War that the law enforcement should keep an eye on anyone who expressed dislike of attitudes and decisions of the U.S. government. So this is, this is you. This is a lot of your listeners. Heck, that's something that might even apply to me.
Yeah, I think so. In fact, I'm pretty sure you're on the top of the blue list there, judging by the denunciations on the back covers of your books there. And, you know, really, what a badge of honor. You should wear those things like medals on your chest. And well, you know what, for those who aren't as familiar with Jim, no, really, every department of the federal government that you could name, he's been officially denounced by their boss at least at one point or another, and maybe twice. So it's really something else. In fact, I think on your Wikipedia page, people can read the direct quotes of those denunciations and laugh.
It has been up there at various times, but other folks go in and edit and take it off. So it's like, I haven't checked the Wikipedia page for quite a while.
Yeah,
so.
I got to admit, I haven't either, but I thought I remembered that. Anyway, good stuff. Yeah, you're sure a hell of a public policy hooligan there, Jim. All right, yeah, on the overreach thing. Let's talk about overreach on the right and overreach on the left and this and that kind of thing. On the right, you got some pretty dangerous neo-Nazis, and I don't know how dangerous the Klan is anymore, but, you know, presumably they could be, and you probably want to keep them surveilled. And then, it's government work. And so now all of a sudden, any kind of right-winger who's not a Republican Party rank-and-file voter and supporter first is suspect. You know, the Gadsden flag from the American Revolution that, you know, ought to be owned by all of us is somehow now supposed to represent some kind of right-wing terrorist threat against the state, which you would think would just fly that right next to the Stars and Stripes proudly and all of that. It's the legacy of our history and all that. Anyways, and then, yeah, there was one, I'm not exactly sure if it was a Fusion Center. I think it was a Fusion Center report that had Ron Paul bumper stickers, right? NRA bumper stickers, any of these kinds of things, casting a very wide net for people who could be, either prosecuted or maybe targeted to be recruited to be informants, help set up and entrap other people. And we've seen quite a bit of that. Mostly people, when you think of the entrapments, you think of, the local idiot, in the Muslim community that gets entrapped, but they have a history of doing this to right-wingers too. Remember the Hutterite militia and all that was one of these entrapment jobs. The plot, there's a guy being prosecuted right now for a plot to kill a bunch of Muslims, I think, on the internet. I'm sorry, I'm not all that read up on it. But he was basically put up to it, encouraged, egged on by an FBI informant in that one, that kind of thing. So it seems like, I guess what I'm getting at, Jim, is that they could really be making people who are more or less harmless a lot worse with this kind of thing. Letting people know that, hey, if your politics are to the right of the Republican Party at all, you're possibly in deep trouble. That's going, people are going to react against that.
Well, and it's there are a lot of different things wrong with it. I mean, for one thing, it's a complete waste of government law enforcement resources, because you're going on the assumption that almost the 10 or 20% of the population is a dire threat, whereas the actual fact is you've got a, well, as far as the Klan and the neo-Nazis, you've got a very, very small number of folks. I mean, you have a lot more folks who might say dumb things or things that are offensive on Twitter and Facebook or elsewhere on the web. But it doesn't make sense to assume it's simply because someone throws out some really stupid or obnoxious or noxious idea that person is the same as level of threat as someone that wants to dress up in a World War II German uniform with a swastika on it. So, I think a lot of folks have tried to profit from greatly exaggerating the threat from both left-wingers and right-wingers. That's something which helps sanctify the government power and the DHS and local and police law enforcement. But it'd make a lot more sense to look at the people who are actually violent, because that's a hell of a lot smaller universe, and these are folks who might actually do harm. There's, again, a very small number, I think, on the right. As far as the left, I don't know, because it's fascinating to see the reaction from a lot of the left-wing media, including the UC Berkeley paper, to the riot that happened, I guess, last week when Milo, what's his name, was supposed to speak there. And it's sort of like, okay, this is a virtue now to be smashing things up and setting fires and smashing ATMs. It's like, it's very strange.
Yeah. Either they've got agents provocateur or they don't even need them, because they're such dumbasses that they're going ahead and doing their enemies' work for them. Because,
I don't
of course,
think that
the
they
real
need
deal is like
provocateur at Berkeley. So,
yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. It would have been easier to say just not very long ago that, come on, these Earth First guys, what they do? Occasionally they let some monkeys out somewhere, they smash some SUVs at some parking lot. I mean, these are crimes, but these are not, terrorist threats to the homeland here. But then you have them saying, oh, yeah, we are too. Watch this. See how many fires we can set at Berkeley, for just one example. And, I mean, of all the protests going on and all that, that's not really representative, but on TV it is.
Well, there was a nice piece that Tom Knapp has on the Libertarian Institute website on the anti-fascist types who are using basically authoritarian tactics to silence anyone who they disagree with. It's like, not the best way to fight fascism.
Yeah, and you know what? Again, like, if these guys were really goose-stepping down the street with swastikas on or something, that'd be one thing, but all of a sudden now we want to define fascism as broad as possible, which is fair in some contexts. Like Bob Higgs says, well, it's a participatory fascism. America's a fascist state. There's no really question about that.
I would strongly disagree with that, but anyhow.
Yeah, well, let's say there's a lot of corporatism and a permanent war, whatever you want to call that.
Well, there's a lot of unfortunate policies. There's a lot of bad foreign policies. There's a lot of government agencies that got way too much power. And at times there's a lot of people cheering on government abuses. And all of that's ugly.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and anyway, even if you agree with Bob Higgs that it is a form of fascism that we already live under in this country, if you're just going to go ahead and take that and say, oh, well, then that means I can start a fist fight with anybody to the right of me now, that kind of thing, then that's obviously a cheap excuse and not any kind of real emergency worth fighting. I mean, you're right that whatever his name is probably obnoxious, but that's not the kind of thing that you insult somebody over. assault.
Well, I mean, it's fine to insult them, but you don't smash the windows
assault,
and,
yeah.
have the pyrotechnics and just busting up the student center and just menacing. I mean, that was the same tactic that both the communists and the Nazis did in the 1920s in Germany. They would be, you know, they would be out there menacing and shutting people down and doing all kinds of stuff just to maximize intimidation. It's like, you know, do we need this on a college campus?
Yep. Well, and of course, to the DHS, hey, look, some more Homeland Security to secure.
Well,
right? This
that's
actually
true.
Serves
I mean,
the state perfectly.
Yep. Yep. You know, you might get a new federal program of grants to colleges to have more safety or whatever, which is, you know, which would be complete BS, but not a novelty.
Yep. And, you know, I'm not saying I agree with this necessarily, but you could see where they're coming from when I saw some communists on Twitter. I mean, I think legit, like hardcore leftist ideologues saying, you know, basically accusing all these left-wing activists in the streets of basically being fools and being, you know, basically the agents of Himmler or whatever, creating the crises that the right wing will use to react against and all of that. Because it was on its face so destructive to them, that was the only explanation for it, was that it was an inside job, you know?
Well, and it's easy to understand why the actual hardcore leftists or communists would feel that way, because there's been a bunch of different laws, bills introduced in state capitals around the country to cut back on these demonstrations and protests, which is something I'm totally against. I mean, I'm all in favor of protests as long as they're, you know, relatively peaceful and don't block the damn road. So, I mean, this is part of their joy. It used to be part of their joy being an American, you know, to go out and protest and insult the government, insult the politicians and all that. And then, okay, end of the day, we go home. But now it's supposed to be like, well, you know, it doesn't really count unless you set fires and bust open at least two ATMs. It's like, what's the point of that? It's, I mean, it's funny. Folks are talking about Soros paying the demonstrators. I mean, I would think as far as those ones down at Berkeley, at University of California, heck, I mean, Trump was overwhelmingly the beneficiary of their that violence. And after the riot, you have the you know, students in the paper out there are all in favor of it. It's like, you know, it was a triumph of virtue, busting things up and setting fires. It's like, folks, you can do better than that.
Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our status enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. Yeah, well, you'd like to think. So, yeah, I mean, I guess at the end of the day, really all it means is a bunch of cops get raises and get expanded powers and get to say, see, we told you so. And, you know, certainly Trump meant it. That's Horton's Law, is you can take all their bad promises to the bank and forget all their good ones. And he promised he's going to be a law and order. And nobody loves cops more than Donald Trump. And, you know, he's certainly taken that attitude. Anything you boys want, you just let me know. And so, yeah, giving them a bunch of excuses right now, picking fights that you can't win and this kind of thing, maybe not the best thought-through strategy. But anyway.
It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. Trump's comments on police are one of the most unfortunate parts of his entire ideology. So, hopefully that part doesn't get even more prominent or doesn't get put into law. I don't think it's going to go that far in law because there would be a lot of resistance from Democrats and quite a few people in the GOP like Rand Paul and Justin Amash.
Yeah. Well, I wonder what, you know, I mean, they had these new executive orders that came out yesterday. They can only go so far with that. I mean, I guess Trump has said that he wants to make it a federal crime if anybody ever kills a cop. even, you know, a local cop. But I wonder how the local cops and the local district attorney's offices and the local state governments are going to like that, because I think they really like prosecuting and executing cop killers themselves, right?
This is something which has helped a lot of district attorneys become congressmen.
Exactly. Don't take that away from us.
Well, and not only that, but it's total BS to federalize crimes across the board, like the federal hate crime of the evil guy that killed the folks at the church in Charleston, South Carolina. South Carolina law would have done fine to convict him, and South Carolina is probably death penalty friendly. So it's like, but no, it's got to be a federal case. So.
Yeah. Well, and you know, Trump, it's not just that he doesn't have any background or any real understanding of the Constitution or federalism, old or new, or you know, pre-FDR traditions, post, or any of this kind of stuff. He's got, not only that, he has, apparently, he doesn't care about any of the norms and the customs and the sort of rules of respect, the unwritten ones. Anthony Gregory was pointing out to me just how many rules of the way the government operates are really just based on tradition and respect, and that without those, you know, norms basically holding these guys down, they can do a lot of damage. And he doesn't seem to have any idea of what the limits are that he's even willing to break, you know?
Well, I mean, that's true. I mean, flip side of that is you had Eric Holder and Obama trampling a lot of norms as well and abusing power left and right. And a lot of the demagoguery that the anti-gun, anti-Second Amendment demagoguery by Obama and Eric, you know, folks are more justifiably mortified by Trump's comments this week on asset forfeiture. But you turn the clock back to 2009, it was Eric Holder who was championing asset forfeiture and pushing it at the state and local level. It was Eric Holder late in the